we have bowl. Okay, that'll work. All right, with that, I think we'll... Are you ready on yours? Perfect. With that, I think we will call long range to order. If we could please run through the roll.
Chairman Mike Hopkins.
Here.
Senator Mike Cuff.
Here.
Senator Ellie Boldman.
Here.
Representative Jim Hamilton.
Representative Hamilton is here. He is just out of the room at the moment.
Senator Kerry Smith.
Excused.
And Representative Sue Vinton.
Excused. All righty, and as we start to get started here today, let me make sure that I'm set up here. All righty, with that, I think I will hand this guy over. We'll do that.
Well, with roll out of the way, Kathy, do you have any words you'd like to give us this before we open on these bills?
Mr. Chairman, and I'm hoping I'm not going to steal part of the chairman's remarks, but in long-range planning, we do, for those of you who are new, we do something kind of strange. It's very unusual and only happens in your subcommittee. We hear the executive recommendation for these programs by program. As a result, we're going to have a few days coming up, in fact, the rest of the time you're in the subcommittee, where we will be working out of more than one bill because we are doing them by program. So today we are going to be working in 11 and 14. Tomorrow we'll be working 11, 14, and 6. So this is something that's very unique to your subcommittee and might be a little confusing, but we're going to try to walk you through it. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Kathy. And do any of our other members of the committee have any comments at this time? If we'll give... Representative Hamilton a second to settle in. Representative Hamilton, we just had a few words from Kathy. Essentially, she explained that what we're doing today and in the next several days will be, today we will hear House Bill 11 and 14 together. They will both be opened, and they will be opened together and closed later, and that we are... The reason for that is we're working on programs, and some of the programs blend between the two bills. Then probably tomorrow we will add House Bill 6, and it also blends with these three. So this is about the only place you will hear multiple bills opened at the same time. And I think Mr. Chairman's about ready to open on those. Do you have any words before we open on the bills, Senator or Representative Hopkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to say that so far in committee, even though we've gone through House Bill 9, with House Bill 12, we ran into something kind of brand new. With the opening of House Bill 11 and 14, the committee is getting back to far more of a regular business order. So like was said, it's a weird experience to be having hearings on, you know, sometimes three bills at basically the same time for all intents and purposes. But it is the norm here for the newer members. And I think that's about it.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, We shall be ready to open on House Bill 11 and 14 by our chairman, who has given me the microphone and gavel, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Mike Hopkins, HOPKINS, representative for House District 92. Today we're going to be bringing and opening both House Bill 11 and House Bill 14. We're going to start off with House Bill 11. House Bill 11, which our returning members have certainly seen, well, more times than I've seen it. For our newer members, it is the Treasure State Endowment Program. Treasure State Endowment Program, I believe, was started, voted in by voter referenda in the early 90s. Like, I guess it would, I think it was 92, it would have to be an even number, I imagine. You'll see three primary different types of projects contained within the grant program, the first of which is bridges. I'm not sure that we actually handle bridges anywhere else, even though you've seen a request for funding for a single bridge, I believe, within House Bill 12. Certainly not the norm. So you have bridge projects within the Treasure State Endowment Program, and then in the other column you will see water projects, wastewater projects, sewer projects. I believe that the department took in 48 applications this time around. The cash funding stream for House Bill 11 for the Treasure State Endowment Program contains funding for, I believe, the first 17 regular water sewer projects as well as 7 bridge projects. The water sewer projects being about, what was it, $11.8 million, and I believe the bridge projects totaling $3.1 million. And the reason why we have 14 coming up here at the same time, and this is something that committee members will see in pretty much every day of our hearings from now until the time that we conclude our business, is that whereas if you have 48 project requests within House Bill 11 and our cash funding stream funds down to Project 17, House Bill 14 seeks to interact with House Bill 11 by extending that funding line down further to cover more projects. So whereas you might find the first 17 water sewer projects in House Bill 11 funded by the cash in the program, you will find far more projects funded from the House Bill 11 list within House Bill 14. Tomorrow we will be talking about House Bill 6 in regards to its relationship with House Bill 14 as well, and that is because House Bill 14 doesn't just interact with House Bill 11 or the Treasure State Endowment Program, it also interacts with House Bill 5, House Bill 6, and House Bill 7. So I don't think I'll try to go too much deeper than that, because we're obviously going to have comments from Budget Director as well as a budget breakdown from Kathy. I would just say on the 11 front, the Treasure State Endowment Program is kind of the golden child of what we do here. It's just a stellar program. If you were to take a look at a map that showed projects that had received grants from this program over the years, I'm pretty sure you would find that it covers pretty much the entirety of the state of Montana. And if you were to take a look at 14, remembering that during the last session between House Bill 553 and House Bill 652, we tried to create ourselves a roadmap to having a different kind of discussion around infrastructure, one that was bound by fiscal sanity and reality, and one that provided us with a way forward to have these conversations in the future that puts the emphasis where the emphasis should be, and that's on what the financial reality of the state of Montana is, what the need is out in the state of Montana for these kind of projects, and how, given the size of our state and the size of our population and thus our tax base, we are best able to serve those needs. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I think that I would turn it back over to yourself, and I would leave both House Bill 11 and House Bill 14 in the tender loving care of the Long Range Planning Committee.
Representative Hopkins, I might ask, either make a comment or ask a question, and you can make the comment. But other than opening these bills together, they are not tied at the hip.
They are not.
Each one will pass or not pass on its own. Now, and probably the connection would change. Let's just say if for some reason House Bill 11 did not pass and House Bill 14 did pass, I suspect the list would be changed in 14.
Mr. Chair, absolutely. And just at first blush, for the purposes of the committee work, I can also see multiple places where we're going to have to do a little bit of work on these bills. They come to us pretty darn well put together. But yes, not only are they going to run separately, but we're going to have to shift them around a little bit, around the same way that we had looked at them during the previous session.
We share the information, but each bill is a separate bill.
Absolutely it is.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. Now, are you going to open with presentation, or do we go to Mr. Almy?
I believe we will be going to Budget Director Almy. The last thing that I wanted to say, just because I forgot it in my opening, if that's okay with the chair, is I would refer members who are online and, I guess, here in person too, where we were dealing with the Historical Preservation Grant Program. We were looking at Volume 8 as a pretty decent little booklet with a lot of information for you on the program. For the Treasure State Endowment Program, it is Volume 4. So we brought up copies for you of Volume 4 at the beginning of our committee work. If you do not have them in front of you, you can, of course, access them online, and Kathy can correct me if I am wrong here, but I believe that, as well as links to a very significant amount of extra information, is in our virtual binders within our long-range planning webpage for the committee work. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Let's go ahead. Is it Mr. Almy? Budget Director Almy, are you ready to proceed?
I am, thank you. Good morning, Chairman Hopkins, members of the committee. My name is Kurt Almy, K-U-R-T-A-L-M-E, and I am the Budget Director. On behalf of the Governor, I testify in support of House Bill 14 and the related bills that you'll be considering in the next few days. As we all know, and as the chairman outlined, the bill includes projects that are proposed to be bonded, about $91.5 million, including proposed authorizations and appropriations for six projects, proposed appropriation for Treasure State Endowment Program, proposed appropriation for renewable resource grants, and proposed appropriations for reclamation and development grants. The project set forth in the bill, I think, as you all know, are the result of a lengthy process. We encourage a subcommittee to review each project and ensure that it's a priority for our state at this time and that it's well conceived. We'll have representatives from each agency, at least those that report to the governor, present throughout your hearings on this bill to explain this project and answer any questions you need.
Budget Director Almy, we think we've lost the connection. Are you still there? Are you still there, Budget Director? I see you now.
Are you able to hear me?
We lost you for a minute.
Okay. Well, I'll back up here. I want to be sure that I take the chance to encourage the subcommittee to review each project and ensure that it's a priority for the state at this time and that it's well conceived. And we will have representatives from each agency, at least those that report to the governor, present throughout your hearings on this bill to explain this project and answer any questions that it may have. Also available will be Russ Catherman, the state architect, and Department of Administration staff. We believe that the authorized bonding in the bill is within the financial capacity of the state, and given our current low level of debt, will not impact our credit rating. Ryan Evans and Jason Harlow from the budget office will be available throughout your hearings to answer any questions you may have about the bonding aspects of the bill. As we move past the changes brought on by COVID in the coming months, in the executive branch, we're going to be considering enterprise-wide whether some level of ongoing remote work should continue. And if some level of remote work is in the best interest of the state, we will be considering whether the size and makeup of our facilities' footprints should reduce or otherwise change. But regardless of the results of that review, we're going to need to continue to properly maintain the property owned by the state and continue with necessary capital development projects in an orderly and well-planned fashion, including appropriate use of low-interest debt, as contemplated, as the chairman mentioned, by House Bill 53 and I believe it was 652, adopted last session. The general fund expenses in the bill during the biennium are contained in the governor's budget. So we urge the committee to closely consider the projects contained in House Bill 14 and the related bills and make any appropriate amendments, and then pass it from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. And so, Mr. Cantarud. Does Mr. Cantarud have a presentation?
Yes, I do. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Richard Cantarud. It is spelled K-N-A-T-T-E-R-U-D. I am a division engineer with the Montana Department of Commerce, and I'm here today to talk about House Bills 11 and 14. And before I get too far into this, I'd like to do a sound check. Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, we do hear you. You're coming in loud and clear. But at this point, I have two things. I want to make sure I'm pronouncing your name right. Is it Cantarud?
Cantarud.
Cantarud. Okay, and now, Mr. Cantarud, we have a question from one of the members of the committee, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Question for Director Almy, please.
Director Almy, are you available to respond to a question?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair and Director Almy. My question is on the 1% movement that was listed in HB 652 from last session, the Capital Development Project Fund. I think the budget is proposing that that be eliminated and be replaced by the increase in bonding, or is there still a net number above that which exists? I don't know if I asked that well.
Did you understand the question, Budget Director Almy?
Could you repeat that, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair and Director Almy. My question is about the 1% that is listed in the 1% of general fund revenue that is supposed to be transferred under HB 652 to the Capital Development Project Fund. And I think your budget, the governor's budget, proposes to eliminate that 1% and may replace it with additional bonding, but I'm not quite sure if those two equal each other, or could you explain the rationale for that, and if, in fact, they do equal each other?
Budget Director Almy.
Excuse me, Mr. Vice Chairman. If I may I redirect that question to Ryan Evans in our office?
Yes. Is he available now?
He should be on.
Hello, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Evans.
Okay, great. I couldn't see my picture here. I just wanted to make sure I was on. Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton. Yeah, you're right. On the capital development piece, as well as the major maintenance repair, the major maintenance and repair piece is fully funded in the budget. Present law would suggest a budgeted transfer to the capital development fund. As part of the budget, we did have a new proposal to pull back that amount with the idea that we would leverage the state's bond rating, take advantage of low interest rate environments, and some of the money that we would pay for with cash right now, we would bond for instead. So that saves us a little bit of money in the short term, and again, it leverages low long-term interest rates at this point.
Representative Hamilton.
Follow-up, Mr. Vice Chair.
Follow-up.
Mr. Vice Chair and Mr. Evans, thank you for that answer. I think there's a second part to my question, though, which is with the cessation or lack of movement of that 1% and the increase in bonding, is the net result that we're doing the same amount of infrastructure as we had been in the previous budget if we had left the 1% capital development alone and had bonding at a lower level?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, I think you can certainly make the argument that we're actually leveraging more infrastructure than we'd be able to make. the amount that we would have made on the as the pay-as-we-go provision, that value is more than the debt service that we'll be paying for the current biennium. That said, the total value of the projects by bonding them far exceed the amount we would have been able to pay as a pay-as-you-go infrastructure. And so it would be my opinion that it leverages even more infrastructure with more bang for the buck, if you will. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Evans.
Representative Hamilton satisfied with the answer. And so now, Mr. Kneteroud?
Yes.
You're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of Long Range Planning. We are here today for House Bills 11 and 14. These bills include applications for infrastructure projects submitted to the Treasure State Endowment Program, which will be called TSEP for most of this hearing, administered by the Department of Commerce. And many of the projects were concurrently submitted to the Department of Natural Resources Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program. So you will also hear the acronym RRGL to refer to those projects. And we will be identifying those projects as we proceed with the hearing. So TSEP is designed to help address the affordability of local infrastructure projects for providing grants to lower the cost of constructing public facilities. And as Chairman Hopkins indicated, the program was authorized by Montana voters with the passage of Legislative Referendum 110 in 1992. You can see the law in Montana Code annotated in Title 90, Chapter 6, Part 7. So TSEP provides a competitive grant program for matching, one-to-one match, infrastructure construction grants. We also have matching planning grants, and we have emergency grants. Eligible applicants include local governments, it's basically cities, towns, counties, tribal governments, and water and wastewater districts. Funding for TSEP grants comes from the interest earnings of the Treasure State Endowment Fund Trust, which has a fixed principal balance and generates interest revenues annually into the TSEP Income Fund. Eligible project types include drinking water systems, wastewater systems, storm sewer, solid waste systems, and bridges. So we did receive 48 construction grant applications for the 2023 biennium. The request was about $26.7 million in funds for 18 wastewater projects, 21 drinking water projects, 2 stormwater projects, and 7 bridge projects. Staff reviewed and ranked the applications based on the criteria set forth in statute and the TSEP application guidelines. The bridge projects were ranked separately. We are required to submit 2 separate lists, 1 for water, wastewater, stormwater, solid waste, and the other list for bridges. So we did that. There are 7 statutory priorities used in the ranking process. So in order of available points, they include health and safety, financial need, technical solution, planning and management, funds from other sources, job opportunities, and community support. Most of the points come from health and safety, that's 1,250 out of 5,000 points, or financial need, that's 1,000 points out of a possible 5,000. The other 5 statutory priorities have 750, 650, 550, 450, and 350 points available to them. So House Bill 11 includes 17 infrastructure and 7 bridge projects for a total grant appropriation of just over $13 million. House Bill 14 includes 24 infrastructure projects for a total project grant appropriation of about $13.7 million. And obviously, TCEP statute provides that the legislature will make the final decisions on funding awards and make the necessary appropriations for these grants. So today, we will be hearing from applicants that applied to TCEP, but not to RRGL. TCEP projects that do not have RRGL funding included in the funding package include 7 bridge projects and 7 others. Tomorrow and Friday, we will hear the projects that propose both TCEP and RRGL funding. So please keep in mind that TCEP and RRGL have significantly different criteria used in the ranking process. Again, TCEP focuses on health and safety and financial need. RRGL will be focusing on renewable resources. You will notice that some projects are ranked high in one program and low in another program. That is normal, and it is to be expected because of the different criteria. Your handout information should include Volume 4 of the executive budget, and that contains information on all projects in House Bills 11 and 14. Volume 4 also includes a status update on projects awarded by the last legislature, plus information on planning and emergency grants awarded since the last session. During the Historic Preservation Grant Program hearings, we heard from the chairman that there was interest in getting a quick update on the Delivering Local Assistance Program. And Anita, if you would advance a slide. So the last session, House Bill 652 was passed. Part of House Bill 652 included a program called Delivering Local Assistance. And it provided $21.5 million in grants. We received almost 200 applications, 116 for schools, 75 for local governments. 28 projects for schools were funded, 17 projects for local governments were funded. All awarded projects met startup by the September 30th, 2020 deadline. 28 of those projects are in construction or have finished construction. And from our perspective, DLA was a big success. Next slide, please. If you want to see a list of the projects, this is our webpage where you could go to find a list of those projects that were approved for funding. I think you already have that list, so let's go to the next slide. And those lists should look like that. I think these are sorted by county. So one list will be for the schools and one list will be for local governments. And yeah, we can just kind of flip through those. And if this is just to give you an idea of what those lists look like. So if you want to look at them, that's where they are. We also had in House Bill 652 some TCEP projects that were not included in House Bill 11 from the last session. So 33 projects were potentially awarded funding, and 25 of those projects met startup before available funds ran out. So basically what we had from the list that we provided to the legislature, to the governor's office, projects 15 through 40, the grant request was around $15 million, $14 million, something like that. The available funds for those projects was about $9 or $10 million. So what what the deal was whoever met startup conditions first would have access to those funds. And you can find the list of those projects starting on page 110 of volume 4 of your handout. There were 8 projects from House Bill 652 that did not meet startup conditions in time before the funds ran out. 6 of those 8 projects reapplied in 2020. And as I mentioned before, there were also, in addition to House Bill 652, there were TSET bills in House Bill 11 from the 2019 session. So today we will have myself and Rachel Clark, division engineer, assisting in project introductions. We're both available for questions. We also have Cheryl Cohen, who is our interim division administrator, and Becky Anseth, the infrastructure program manager. They are listening in and can work to provide any clarifying information that may be requested by the committee. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my introductory comments.
Thank you, Richard. Do we have questions, comments from members of the committee before we start moving on? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Kneteroud. Mr. Chair, Mr. Kneteroud, in the DLA projects, this screen that we have up right now says 33 projects potentially awarded funding, 25 have met the criteria, and I'm sorry you went through it, but I missed it. How many actually applied for DLA funding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, the slide you were looking at was the TSET bills that were also in House Bill 652. Anita has dropped back to the Delivering Local Assistance Grant slides, which was a different set of projects. So Delivering Local Assistance Grants, part of House Bill 652, we had 116 school applications and 75 local government applications. We had enough funds to fund 45 of those projects, 28 schools, and 17 local governments.
Great, thank you. And that's, I guess we do have a copy of your slides. I found it now.
Excellent. Do we have further questions from members of the committee online? I am looking, not seeing any hands being raised. I have just a couple of quick clarifiers. So when we were looking at the 33 projects that had technically been eligible for funding, with 25 of them getting the funding, again, with the concept being that if you were ready to start up first, then you started up first, leaving about 8 applicants. You had said 6 of those 8 applicants had reapplied. What had happened to the other 2?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know.
Well, that'll happen. Then the next question that I had for you, and I'm not sure if I was smart enough to include this in my ask when I was asking for a breakdown for DLA in 652, but do we have a current number for where the Quality School Fund sits in and of itself, considering that the part of the money for DLA during the last legislative session was to sort of provide a bridge for quality schools while it started to build up a little bit? And that can be a question for Richard, that can be a question for Kathy, anybody who happens to have an answer.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that, so if Kathy or somebody else can help.
Mr. Chairman, I would need to do some research on that. I am actually not sure that fund is in existence anymore.
That should be the question.
But let me research that, and I will get back to you with that information maybe tomorrow.
Perfect. That would be excellent, Kathy. Thank you very much. And do we have any other questions or comments from members of the committee before we move on? And then, Richard, for how we move forward, did we have Rachel with some comments right now, or was it just as we go into the actual project list itself that both of you are going to run us through it?
So, Mr. Chairman, as we run through the projects that I'm most familiar with, I'll introduce. the projects that Rachel is most familiar with, she will introduce, and that will get us through the end of today.
That sounds good. Then I think with that, Kathy, if you are ready, we would go through that budget breakdown.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Anita, could you stop screen sharing for just a bit? Thank you. And I'm going to screen share, Mr. Chairman, if I can find it here.
Yep, there we go.
Okay, there we go. We're back in our binder. For those of those subcommittee members who are not here in person today, we have many of the items that you are hearing about available to you. The daily agenda is, I'm going to start putting on this messages page. This daily agenda includes on the second page, and I need to move some things around so I can blow this up a little bit. It includes the list of the projects that we're going to be hearing today. So you might find that helpful. I'm going to go back now. If I can figure out how to get back. Oops. I'm sorry. Give me just a minute, Mr. Chairman. I kind of messed that up.
That is no problem at all, Kathy.
Okay, so today, it's in the TC, I believe. So I wanted to show the infrastructure map, kind of give you an idea of what the TCEF program looks like across the state. So if you, on the program, find TCEF, which I'm having trouble doing. I'm sure it's here. There it is. So it will bring up all of the TCEF projects across the state. The different colors of dots indicate which bill they're from, with the blue dots being from House Bill 11 and the purple dots being from House Bill 14. The size of the dot indicates the amount of the total project. So where you see some really large dots, those are very expensive projects. And you'll be hearing about all of these as we go through the next few days. And you'll also notice that down in the table is the full list of the TCEF projects. Included in this table is the emergency grants of $100,000 that are included in House Bill 11, and the project planning grants of $900,000 also included in House Bill 11. So that gets you to what we will see in our table of $27.7 million. Oh, it kicked me out. So I'm going back in again. Okay, and so I'm going to go to programs. I'm going to go to the Treasure State Endowment Program. And I believe under Other, we should have the lists of the delivering local assistance projects that you were referring to, that Richard was referring to, and you were asking about, Mr. Chairman. So that you'll find under tab 8, other. The project list for TSEP, the full project list, is found under the project list tab. And I'm gonna bring that up. I'm gonna increase the size of it a bit. So today we're gonna be hearing all these bridge projects. This project list also tells you what's in House Bill 11 for infrastructure programs, projects, excuse me, and then House Bill 14 infrastructure projects. And the total amount of these listed projects is $26.7 million. Now, let me see if I can get back without closing. Yay. And so I'm going to go through the budget analysis real quick here for you. Load up. This tells, the first page here tells about the TSEP program and some of the criteria that is used to start the ranking of the projects. This is written in statute, and the Treasure State Endowment Program statute is 96702. So you'll find these there, this criteria. So eligible applicants to this program are cities, towns, counties, tribal governments, consolidated governments, county or multi-county water, sewer, solid waste districts, and other entities that are defined in 75-6-304 in the codes. I've got for you in the budget analysis a comparison between the program last session and the program that's being proposed for this session. We are going to be looking at one more bridge project than was approved last session, and we're going to be looking at four fewer infrastructure projects. You see a breakout of the funding. Infrastructure funding is $23.6 million. Bridge funding is $3.2 million. And then those other grants that I mentioned earlier, the emergency grants and the project planning grants, come up to $1 million. And below, you can see where the funding is coming from for the projects. Overall, the program is a reduction of 11% from the 2021 biennium, and the bulk of that being in the state special revenue funds that are being requested to be appropriated this time around. I'm going to talk a little bit about the funding for the Treasure State Endowment Program. This is one of the first programs that we're working with that make use of an actual subtrust in the coal severance tax permanent trust. And right now, I mentioned it before when we were talking about the CNA grants program, interest earnings are pretty low, and they're quite low, in fact. So the program is not getting as much income as it would under a different set of circumstances. The program has got a negative balance at the beginning of the biennium. And what I want to tell you about when we're looking at fund balances, that negative balance does not indicate that the program is going to finish the 2021 biennium or fiscal year 2021 with a negative balance. They will not do that. It simply means at this time, the appropriations that were provided in the last session and prior sessions exceed the amount of income that's anticipated to come in 2021. And that goes for the negative balance at the end of the 2023 biennium, which is negative $519,499. The total income projected through the projections of HJ2 are $15.6 million for the biennium. The Treasure State Endowment Program, like several of the programs we work with, has administrative costs that are paid through these interest earnings that are coming off of the subtrust. And in the 2021 biennium, at this point in time, the program is requesting $1.4 million in administrative costs in the 2021-3 biennium. Then you see the emergency grants and the project planning grants and the total appropriation for projects, which are $13.3 million from the state special fund. So we have a little bit of a negative balance there. Is that concerning? That's your call. How does that happen? How that happens is that there's a little bit of competing revenue estimates that go on. When the initial budget came out, the revenue projections made by the executive were probably just a little bit higher than those projections made and approved for HJ2, made by our office, approved in HJ2 by the Revenue Interim Committee. And so that's why we see a little bit of a negative balance here and there, is because the revenue estimates are slightly different. That said, we really try not to have negative balances. And as I mentioned earlier, this fund will, or account will never go negative. So it will just mean that there certain projects may not be able to go forward. Specifically, those listed in House Bill 11. And I have a series of recommendations for what you might consider doing if you chose to balance this negative balance that we see in the account. So you could request reductions in administrative costs in House Bill 2. You could reduce appropriations in House Bill 11, and you could actually increase appropriations in House Bill 14. So that's one idea of what you might consider. You could reduce the appropriations in House Bill 11 to fund fewer projects, or you could just leave this negative balance and we could see over the next biennium how things work out. then finally, you're going to see a comment like this in several places. So we have a list of projects in House Bill 11 that are funded with the state special revenues that I was just talking about. And what House Bill 11 contains is the highest ranked TSEP projects. The lower ranked TSEP projects are included in House Bill 14. So if the fund balance projection as shown above comes in just like has been projected, then there's going to be a shortfall in the projects in House Bill 11. On the other hand, that if House Bill 14 is passed and approved by the legislature, the funding will be there for the projects listed in House Bill 14. So it's a little bit of a dichotomy that goes on. And what it means is that if both House Bill 11 and 14 are passed, as they're sitting right now, House Bill 14 grants are guaranteed. House Bill 11, not quite as much. They kind of have to wait to see how the interest earnings are received. So this same kind of situation is at play in the Renewable Resource Grant Program and the Reclamation and Development Grant Program. So that's something that you might want to give a little consideration to, and I felt like it was worthy of mention. And Mr. Chairman, I really think that concludes my comments. I did want to say, if I can get back there, that today we put in, well, I'm just going to switch over right here. We put in materials, a couple of the coal severance tax brochures that everybody really enjoys seeing. I'm not going to speak to these brochures because I'm really not the expert on them, but I wanted to show you that they're here. So I'm going to open this up, and I think all of you will recognize Sam Schaefer updates us from our office, and it's the coal severance tax brochure. Gives you a bunch of information on the coal trust. If we look real close, if I can get it to get big enough for you, here's the Treasure State Endowment Program. It is a piece of the permanent trust. The monies that are being made available for projects do come through interest earnings from this trust, and they are transferred into the state special revenue account for the program to spend. So you'll see that for a number of the programs that we work with here in Long Range. And Mr. Chairman, that concludes my comments.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Kathy. And that little graph breakdown of coal dollars is by far my favorite chart we have here in the legislature. I actually have a copy of it blown up and framed in my house, as weird as that might be. With that, do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee for Kathy on her budget breakdown? Seeing none here in person, and if I could get back to you, minimized on me. There we go. Not seeing any here on Zoom either. With that, Richard, Rachel, I think that we are ready to start down the list of projects that we will have for the day. Before I turn it over to you, I would simply ask our audience here in person first, but then also folks that are with us online, if there is anybody here testifying and not on a project that we will be going over today with more general comments. Sir, why don't you go ahead, come up to the podium here. We're not going to be spending a whole lot of time on this today, but if there is somebody who is not here for a specific project for the day, I'd like to go ahead and cycle them through now. So we'll first take individuals that were here in person, and then we'll ask the same thing of Zoom, and then we will move on. Sir, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Jason Riddle, R-I-T-T-A-L, stand before you on behalf of the Montana Association of Counties. Our 56 members support this piece of legislation. House Bill 11 is every session an important piece for our members, specifically the bridge projects. While we have our residents within our municipalities and our water and sewer districts that also take advantage of the water and sewer projects and the solid waste projects, from a county budget perspective, the bridge projects are essential. When those bridges start to fail in our rural areas, it affects agriculture. We can't get farm to market. So these dollars help offset what would otherwise be a property tax burden for folks. So not only do we support HB 11 as a whole, but specifically the bridge allocation that is put out. As with any major piece of legislation, especially one that biennially spends this kind of money, we think there's always room for improvement. We have reached out to the chair about a potential small amendment, so I wanted to mention that today. It's fairly simple in its thought. When a project comes to the idea of a local government, it is generally 2 or more years out from actual award by the Department of Commerce, which follows the passage of House Bill 11. Over that span of time, a lot of things happen. But from a financial perspective, the one thing that happens for sure is the project gets more expensive. So we would like to back up and give the local governments the ability to start their project at some time earlier in the process at their own risk, so that if for instance, they have a very large project that they want to get going, they know it's going to last a significant amount of time, TSUP is great, but DEQ has told them they got to get going. This would allow them to get in the loop and have an opportunity to get that project underway at their own risk. If they don't get the grant funding, they're going to have to do the project anyway, but save possibly, 5% or more in inflationary costs on the project. The other instance I would give you that makes a lot of sense, a lot of times when you go through preliminary engineering report, you identify, you know you have a problem, let's say a bridge, it's structurally deficient. Between when you get ready to apply and get awarded, what if that bridge fails and you have to close it? It would be great for the local government to say, we have an application in the process, we know, but if we could start on this bridge, we don't have to close that road for nearly as long, we don't have to detour our farmers and ranchers for nearly as long, and save the economy. So we will be bringing that forward. I do have a more detailed description of what that change looks like. At the chair's pleasure, I would give that to staff for dissemination, and it's the same copy that you have via email. So.
That would be fine. Thank you.
With that, I would stand for questions if anybody has any.
Are there any questions from members of the committee in here, in person, or online? Seeing none, thank you very much, sir. As we go online, Heather, correct me if I'm wrong. From what I can see, we have one individual with their hand raised. That's Mr. Burton. Perfect. Thank you kindly. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Tim Burton, B-U-R-T-O-N, and I am the executive director of the Montana League of Cities and Towns, and we represent all 127 incorporated municipalities in Montana. Mr. Chairman, I would like to thank you for carrying House Bill 14 and Representative McCamey for carrying House Bill 11. We stand in strong support of those bills this morning. Mr. Chairman, you referenced the TSEP program as the gold standard, and I couldn't agree with you more. I'll be very brief, Mr. Chairman. I know that you've got a lot of work to do. We also stand in support of the amendment that was explained by Mr. Riddle from Maco, and I'll leave it at that this morning. I think that it would be a positive change to the program. Mr. Chairman, I believe the way we've got it scheduled here at the league, Kelly Lynch, who is the deputy director and in-house legal counsel for the league, will be following your work as it proceeds, and the league stands by to be a resource to the committee as you conduct your work. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'll close in strong support of House Bill 11 and House Bill 14. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. And with that, Richard, Rachel, I think we can turn it over to yourselves and get started on down the line.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll do a sound check again. Can you still hear me?
We can indeed, sir.
Excellent. First project up is Custer County. This project ranked number one for TCEP on the bridge list. It is listed in House Bill 11. Information can be found on page 28 of the TCEP handout. That would be volume 4. The project will replace the Dead Man Road Bridge, which is located 10 miles northeast of Miles City. The grant request is $378,615. The total project cost, $757,230. And I believe we have a commissioner that wants to testify.
Oh, I see a hand being raised on Zoom.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is Jason Strouf, last name S-T-R-O-U-F. I am the Custer County Commission Chair, so I'm speaking on behalf of the Board of Custer County Commissioners, and we strongly support funding of this project. And in regards to testimony, in regards to the amendment that is yet to be proposed, Custer County can speak firsthand on this particular bridge. After submittal of our TCEP grant was recommended to be closed subsequent to inspection by the state of Montana, we were able to make some temporary emergency repairs to reopen that bridge under restricted load limits. But this bridge is critical to Custer County in regards to emergency access to the residents, property owners along Dead Man's Road. It is also critical for agricultural production in regards to receiving the goods that they need to perform their services, as well as getting their products to market. Additionally, Custer County would support this project due to the wind farm energy project that is being planned and proposed for this immediate area of Custer County, which also includes a three-county area, Garfield County, Rosebud County. So again, Custer County strongly supports this. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. With that, do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none here in person, not seeing any hands raised online, I think we are good to move forward.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, project number two is, bridge project number two is Choteau County.
You are listening,
restless. It is listed in House Bill 11. Information can be found on page 29 of the TCEP handout. The project will replace the Meeks Bridge, which is located 4 miles southeast of Highwood. The grant request is about $318,000. The total project cost is about $637,000. And I believe we have Susan from Bear Paw Development that wishes to testify.
Excellent. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Chairman Hopkins and members of the committee. My name is Susan Burrard, B-R-U-R-U-D. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today regarding TCEP funding for the Upper Highway Number 3 Bridge in Choteau County. I am here today as the project grant manager from Bear Paw Development Corporation. Carl Yakowicz, project manager from Great West Engineering, is also available on the call to answer any technical questions that you may have on the project. This grant will assist Choteau County in replacing the Upper Highwood No. 3 Bridge over the Highwood Creek, 4 miles southeast of Highwood, also known as the Meeks Bridge. The county is responsible for maintaining 26 bridges and has six other bridges listed in its capital improvements plan in need of repair or replacement. The Meeks Bridge serves as the primary access for 28 full-time residences, a mail route, school bus route, agricultural operations, and recreational users of state and federal lands. The bridge is located on a road that is the busiest county-maintained route in Choteau County. The bridge serves an estimated 280 vehicles per day. Per information provided by the MDT, this bridge was constructed in 1969. It is classified as structurally deficient and is in poor condition. The condition of the bridge creates a serious threat to overall public safety and represents a liability to the county. Local residents wrote, "The bridge in its current condition is narrow, damaged, and has no barrier into Highwood Creek. Would like to see it replaced with a bridge wide enough for large machinery and built to withstand the traffic and heavy loads. Alternate routes using Burley Hill or Gap Road are not passable with large machinery or a loaded semi. This road is vital to the use of the Highwoods by the farming and ranching community. Choteau County cannot afford to replace this bridge without TCEP assistance and appreciates the TCEP program grant consideration. Choteau County asks for your support to fund this project. Thank you for your consideration."
Well, thank you very much, Susan. We appreciate your time coming to talk to us here about your project. Do we have any questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Hamilton, is that a Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure exactly who to ask this question of, but my question is, on each one of the listings in our Volume 4, there is a sufficiency rating for the bridge, and I don't know what that means. Could someone explain that to us?
I do have a copy of the sufficiency rating for this. I think I will turn that question over to Carl Yakovich for further information.
That would be fine.
Thank you. That'd be fine.
That is, if they are available.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Richard.
While Carl tries to get on the line, the sufficiency rating is a number used by the Federal Highway Administration to determine whether a bridge is eligible for funding or not. So less than 50%, it's eligible for federal funding. Between 50 and 80%, it's a bridge that is eligible for repairs. 80% and greater, it's a bridge in pretty good condition. So the sufficiency rating looks at things like structural adequacy, serviceability, essentiality, and then there's some reductions, and you come up with this percentage. So on a lot of these bridges, we'll have sufficiency ratings that are getting kind of low, and that indicates that there's a problem for the bridge. And we use sufficiency rating to help determine an early score for health and safety statutory priority number one. We have kind of a matrix where we look at things like sufficiency rating and the element condition ratings for the deck, superstructure, and substructure. We kind of put that in a matrix. We come up with a score, and then we kind of look at that and judge whether or not that's the right score. And that's how we end up with a score for our statutory priority number one. And I guess if Carl is waiting to provide additional information, I will be quiet.
Carl, did we have Carl there, Heather?
I don't have a Carl on Zoom.
Okay.
Well, I can add, as you can see also in this table, that this was classified as in poor condition. It's indicated by its structurally deficient classification by the National Bridge Inventory sufficiency rating of 63.7. The structure appraisal rating of 4 and a substructure rating of 4 and a deck geometry rating of 4. So the existing structure is compromised of a concrete and a corrugated steel deck, narrow steel stringer superstructure, and a substructure that includes steel pile caps supported by timber piles that are cast into a concrete wall. An additional steel pile cap supported by steel piles is also paired with the timber piles at the north abutment. Because of the poor condition of this, it was determined that it would be better to replace the bridge completely, giving it approximately a 75-year lifespan.
Excellent. Representative Hamilton?
Thanks to both of you. Even I, as a layperson, understood that. Thanks.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Susan. We appreciate your time. And with that, I am not seeing any further questions on Zoom, so I believe that we are good to move forward.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, we agree that replacing the bridge in Choctaw County is batting third today for bridges is Park County. This project ranked number 3 for TCEP on the bridge list. It is listed in House Bill 11. Information can be found on page 30 of the TCEP handout. The project will replace 3 bridges in the Cook City Silver Gate area. The grant request is $492,000, and the total project cost is $984,000. And I believe we have Matt Whitman, who would like to testify, and maybe some others as well.
Excellent. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Whitman, W-H-I-T-M-A-N, and I'm here representing Park County. So these 3 bridges are all very structurally deficient. The best of the 3 is 32, and then we have a 22, and all the way down to 7.8, which is pretty horrible out of 100. They all 3 have scouring under the abutments, and 2 of them are old railroad car bridges. And one of them, as you can kind of see there, has quite the tilt in the bridge deck that is never something you want to see before you drive across it. The 2 bridges on Bannock Trail have low water crossings for heavy vehicles. That's only possible to cross those streams in low water, later in the fall and later in the summer. That's not a great thing in a prime fishing habitat, especially when all 3 of those streams flow into Yellowstone National Park. And they are a single point of access for a bunch of residences and a lot of recreational activity. So if anything were to happen to those and there was an emergency, it would be a bad deal. As well as the Forest Service would like to do a little bit of logging there on the south side of Soda Butte Creek. And the replacement of these bridges would allow them to do that, and in the case of a forest fire, help protect both Park City and Silvergate. All these bridges receive a large amount of recreational use as well as residential use. You can access a large amount of Forest Service area as well as Yellowstone National Park, and it's actually the only truly legal way to snowmobile between Silvergate and Cook City, so it does see a lot of use in the winter as well. And through our preliminary engineering reports, we looked at 5 different construction types, and it looks like the most cost-effective is to do driven steel piles on a prefab steel bridge. And we're looking at doing all 3 of those at the same time because Cook City Silvergate is a long ways from any large interstate or other area, and doing them all together should save some money. And with that, I'd like to open it to any questions you have.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Do we have any questions from members of the committee here in person? Seeing none, taking a look over at Zoom. Do not see any hands being raised, so thank you very much, sir.
And
we appreciate your time, and thank you for coming to see us here today. You can absolutely pass those out.
Okay.
Thank you kindly. Do we have anybody else, either in person or on Zoom, looking to testify on this project? If you are on Zoom, feel free to go ahead and throw a hand up, raise a hand there. Heather, am I correct?
There are no hands raised.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for coming here and talking to us today. We appreciate your time. With that, I believe that we are ready to move forward.
Okay, next up is Powell County. This project ranked number 4 for TCEP on the bridge list. It is listed in House Bill 11. Information can be found on page 31 of the TCEP handout. The project will replace the Willow Bridge near Elliston. The TCEP grant request is $365,900, and the total project cost $731,800. Of course, those are estimates. And I don't know that anybody from Powell County is here to testify.
County Commissioner Doug Cratchy is here to testify.
Sir, please go ahead. Good morning.
Well, thank you, Chairman, and the committee members. I'm Doug Cratchy, C-R-A-C-H-Y. I'm presiding officer for the Board of Commissioners in Powell County. And the grant will assist Powell County in replacing the Willow Road Bridge over the Little Blackfoot River, which is located on the east side of Elliston, Montana, and approximately a half a mile from the intersection with U.S. Highway 12. Willow Road is a county-owned gravel thoroughfare served primarily access to residential, agricultural, logging, and recreational land users. The bridge provides direct access to two full-time residences, several agricultural operations, and recreational. There are also four other residences on that side of the river that primarily use a private bridge, but for any commercial use like construction or concrete trucks, they will not use the private bridge and have to use the county bridge. It is unknown when the original bridge was constructed, but recent inspections and assessments have determined it is near the end of its useful life. It was redecked in 1991 when a snowplow, county snowplow, fell through the decking. Load capacity and poor substructure and superstructure conditions of the bridge create a serious threat to public safety and represent a liability to the county. No practical detour route for emergency vehicles. If the bridge is closed, vehicles are required to cross an adjacent agricultural field with no defined road. And as I said, there is a private bridge, but it has no load limitations, never been inspected for loading on it. So a lot of people are worried about crossing that with a truck. We have had our emergency services people comment, as you've seen on what we submitted, and also the residences that are that live on that side of the river. And I also wanted to add that there's also some commercial. The Yellowstone Pipeline, which runs from east to west through Powell County, is on. They would have to cross the river to service that pipeline. And also the Blackfoot telephone buried cable that goes through would have to use that bridge if they had a problem with their telephone system, telephone cables there. So Powell County, you know, can't afford to replace this bridge without the TCEP funding. And I sure appreciate the committee for allowing me to speak. And thank you very much.
Absolutely, sir. Well, we appreciate you coming to speak with us here today. I do not see any other hands raised online. Is there anybody else here in person that was looking to testify on this project? Seeing none, do we have questions or comments from members of the committee, either here in person or online? Let me try to organize myself better on Zoom here. Seeing none. Again, sir, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
And thank you very much.
And with that, I believe that we are good to move on.
All right, next up is Cascade County. The project ranked number 5 for TCEP on the bridge list. It is in House Bill 11. Information can be found on page 32 of the TCEP handout. The project will replace the Armington Bridge in Armington. The TCEP grant request is $750,000. The total project cost is about $2.1 million. And I think we have Brady and Les on virtual for testifying.
It looks like we do. Brady, good morning.
Good morning. Can everybody hear me?
We can indeed.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Brady Lasilla. L-A-S-S-I-L-A. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of the government and residents of Cascade County. The county hired TD&H Engineering to prepare the TCEP grant application for the Armington Bridge, and I am the TD&H project manager. I am providing this statement on behalf of Les Payne, the Cascade County Public Works Director, and Mary Embleton, the Cascade County Budget and Grants Officer. Cascade County applied for a TSEP grant to replace the Armington Bridge, and I would like to provide testimony in support of House Bill 11. Armington Bridge crosses Belt Creek in Armington, a rural community in Cascade County. Armington Bridge serves approximately 683 people. The bridge was constructed in 1938 and has six timber spans with five timber piers in the creek channel. The primary problem caused by the bridge is the flooding that occurs. Logs and other debris are caught by the five piers in the creek and create log jams. The log jam dams the creek upstream of the bridge, causing floodwaters to overflow to the low-lying land north of the creek, across Central Avenue, and back to the creek channel downstream of the bridge. During major flood events, Cascade County closes Central Avenue over the bridge when water overtops the road. Nearby houses, wells, and septic tanks have become flooded. The flooding creates several health and safety hazards, including drowning, flooded septic tanks, flooded wells and cisterns, chemical hazards, mold and bacteria, occupational safety, and emergency response impacts. The secondary problems to be solved are the functional deficiencies of the bridge. There are inadequate safety features such as insufficient roadway width, bridge railing, and approach guardrail. The timber deck shows areas of rot and has numerous holes penetrating through the entire thickness. Many of the timber girders show deep cracks, and two girders have makeshift repairs. The timber pier caps have splits on the end and show rot. Armington Bridge, in its current condition, can support only approximately 70% of the vehicular weight that a new bridge would be designed for. A lot of time and effort is spent on maintaining this bridge. The county must clear out the log jams from the bridge periodically using an excavator. They estimate about every 5 years. This is expensive and unsafe. County workers have stated that they can feel the bridge sway in the floodwaters while working to clear the debris from in front of the bridge. We prepared a preliminary engineering report that analyzed bridge repair and replacement alternatives. The alternatives were evaluated through a comparative analysis that assessed project costs, present worth, technical feasibility, and environmental impacts. The preferred alternative was chosen as most appropriate and beneficial that will replace the six-span bridge with a three-span concrete bridge at the same location. Decreasing the number of piers while increasing the distance between piers is expected to significantly reduce log jamming in front of the bridge, which will result in less flooding. In addition to reducing the risk of flooding, the bridge will adhere to current road and bridge design and safety standards. Because of our comprehensive preliminary engineering efforts, you can be assured that we have identified a cost-effective solution that best utilizes the grant funding. This project received an overwhelming amount of support from the community. A few community members stated that their properties are impacted annually by flooding, and as a result of the flooding, they have mold problems. Many community members state that they avoid the bridge if possible because it seems unsafe even without a flood. The cost estimate to replace this bridge is $2.083 million. The TSEP project grant is a vital component of the funding for Armington Bridge. The funding package includes $750,000 from TSEP and the rest from the county. The county has already allocated $750,000 from the tax levy bridge fund to the CIP fund for fiscal year 2021. Up to another $750,000 may be committed to the project in fiscal year 2022. On behalf of Cascade County, thank you for your consideration of the Armington Bridge for this TSEP funding opportunity. We urge you to pass House Bill 11 to fund this important infrastructure project for our county. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for your time, sir. We appreciate you coming in to talk with us here today. I'm looking for any other individuals maybe looking to testify on this project really quick. I am seeing none. With that, I'd ask for your questions from the committee. Both online and in person, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question from Mr. LaCilla, if I said that right. Mr. Chair, Mr. LaCilla, the only question I would have here, first of all, I would compliment the amount of money that Cascade County is willing to put into this compared to the TSEP grant. that should be rewarded. The question I have, though, is still being a novice about the sufficiency rating. It's getting up to that level that appears like it is in decent enough shape. So can you explain why that might be that high of a rating with the problems you've discussed?
Yes, I would like to read an excerpt from our preliminary engineering report. From the document, the FHWA, the Federal Highway Administration document that establishes or that defines sufficiency ratings, it states accumulation of drift and debris on the superstructure and substructure should not or should be noted in the inspection form, but not included in the condition rate. Consequently, the large amounts of debris accumulation do not directly impact the rating or sufficiency rating of the bridge. So to underscore, the main problem with the existing bridge is not the structural adequacy, but the dangerous flooding caused by debris accumulation against the closely spaced piers.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton, and thank you. Whoop, did I miss somebody? No, it looks like we're good. And thank you very much for coming to speak to us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
With that, folks, I believe that we are ready to move forward.
Next up is Weibo County. This project ranked number 6 for TCIP on the bridge list. It is in House Bill 11. Information can be found on page 33 of the TCIP handout. The project will replace the St. Philip Bridge. That bridge is located 11 miles south of Weibo. The grant request is about $526,000. The total project cost is just over $1 million. And I believe we have a commissioner online to testify.
Commissioner, do we have you here with us? Looks like we have you unmuted.
Yes, you do. Can you hear me okay?
We can indeed. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Darren Miske. I'm here representing Weibo County today. I have the privilege of being commissioner in Weibo County for the past 7 years. Weibo County is a small county with a population of 1,100 and a land size of 890 square miles. Weibo County's economy is driven by a strong agriculture background. The family and farms and ranches require a strong infrastructure to thrive in this county. And infrastructure in Weibo County includes 600 miles of road and 9 bridges. The TCEP grant we are requesting is for the reconstruction of the St. Philip's Bridge. The St. Philip Bridge is the second most heavily utilized bridge in our county. It provides access to a county church, markets, supplies, and energy emergency services. 4 of the Weibo's county's largest farm and ranch corporations actually utilize this bridge to operate and run their business. It is also used to support the transportation to 11 or 12 houses. This bridge is also the route the Weibo County school bus uses to receive the kids for the bus stop that come from this part of the county. The bridge is located in the southern part of the Weibo and crosses the Beaver Creek. The Beaver Creek flows north to south through the Weibo County. The Beaver Creek has been known to flood due to ice jams that occurs during spring runoff. The ice builds up underneath the bridges, and since a lot of them were designed with many sections of pilings, they cause backup and flooding can occur. The St. Philip's Bridge is the only bridge not affected by the spring flooding in this region of Weibo County, and as a result becomes a main spring route for these residing in southern Weibo County. In 2016, we had a bridge damage from flooding and had to replace it. Weibo County had to pay right at $1 million to have that bridge replaced out of pocket. This caused enormous strain on our county budget. Recent MDD inspections have shown that St. Philip's Bridge needs to be replaced in the near future. Weibo County is trying to be proactive and replace it before it goes out or is too unsafe for use. This is why Weibo County is asking for your help today. The new bridge will cost approximately $1,056,353, and Weibo County is asking for $526,176 from the TCIP program for the reconstruction of the St. Philip's Bridge. The new construction will be a concrete bulb T bridge. This new bridge should be able to provide years of dependable service for our residents and our agricultural operations. Thank you, and I appreciate your time. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Well, thank you, sir. With that, I'd ask for questions or comments from members of the committee. Seeing none online, nor in person. Did we have anybody else that wanted to testify on this project? Not seeing any hands being raised. We would thank you very much for your time today, sir, and for coming to speak with us. With that, I believe that we are good to move forward.
Next up is Madison County. This project ranked number 7 for TSEP on the bridge list. It is in House Bill 11. Information can be found on page 34 of the TSEP handout. The project will replace the JC4 bridge, which is located on Jack Creek Road, 12 miles east of Ennis. The grant request is $338,000. The total project cost is $676,000. And I believe we have a commissioner to testify.
Okay, I think I just saw a hand go up. There we are. Good morning, Commissioner.
Chairman, members of the committee, this is actually Cheryl Cohen, the interim division administrator with the Community Development Division.
Hey, Cheryl.
Jim Hart had been intending to testify, but he was unable to log in, but he did provide us a written statement that I could read on his behalf, if that would suit the committee.
Please.
So for Madison County, for the Jack Creek Bridge, the grant will assist Madison County in replacing the Jack Creek JC4 Road Bridge over Jack Creek, approximately 11.6 miles east of the Jack Creek Road, from Highway 287 intersection just south of Ennis. The Jack Creek Road is a county-owned gravel thoroughfare and is the central connection from the Madison Valley to the Gallatin Valley, specifically the Big Sky Moonlight area from Ennis to the surrounding areas. The bridge primarily serves residents, business owners, and employees, agricultural operations, and recreational users. The Big Sky area provides year-round recreation, including skiing, hunting, fishing, golf, rafting, hiking, and various other outdoor activities to a large and growing population of people. Current ADT estimate is 159. The Big Sky area, Ennis, and Madison County continue to grow at one of the fastest rates in the state of Montana, and subsequently, Jack Creek Road will see increased use due to this growth. The existing bridge was built in 1952 and is comprised of a solid sawn timber stringer bridge with timber abutments, timber deck, and timber substructure. The bridge is near the end of its useful life, and the deck and superstructure are in fair to poor condition. The existing bridge is currently classified as a structurally deficient due to the poor substructure rating of 4. The sufficiency rating is below 50, which according to MDT constitutes serious consideration for full replacement. The structure exhibits advanced deterioration evident by considerable decay, splitting, and deformation at the base of the abutments. Erosion and scour from streams migration have steadily deteriorated the abutment and abutment posts. The existing structure width does not allow for safe two-way travel, and the last Loge bridge rating performed in 1983 and is likely inaccurate for current condition of the bridge. No practical detour route if the bridge is inaccessible to approximately 50-mile detour would be required. Widespread support from users, including Madison County Sheriff Phil Fartner, who stated, quote, "I understand that the bridge has structural concerns and may need to be replaced for public safety, emergency service access, and ensuring adequate vehicle loads. An alternative route for emergency service access, such as emergency travel from Ennis to Four Corners and south of Highway 199 to Big Sky, and then west back toward Ennis on Jack Creek Road is not practicable. There are no alternative routes in a case of an emergency. I support the TSEP bridge application and replacement of the bridge, but encourage, if possible, a temporary crossing during the construction. Madison County is responsible for maintaining 56 bridges and still has 7 other bridges listed in its CIP in need of repairs and replacement. The county cannot afford to replace this bridge without TSEP assistance due to the large scale of the replacement. And finally, the county appreciates the TSEP bridge program and asks for your support.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. We appreciate it. I would ask if there was anybody else online who was looking to testify on this project. Not seeing any hands raised, I would ask for questions or comments from members of the committee, either here in person or online. Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure this is the right spot for this question, but it's more of a general question, and that is, as I am looking at all these bridges, I'm stunned by the bad condition that they're in, realizing there's probably hundreds and hundreds more out there like this, and, unless I'm underestimating or overestimating. But it says in the first page of Volume 4 that only 7 bridge projects applied. Is that possible?
I would imagine it is certainly possible. Do we have anybody online who would prefer to tackle that, Richard?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton. Over the years, TCEP has replaced about 250 bridges for counties. This year's application list was a little bit less than in previous years. I suspect maybe it had to do with COVID and people just worried about the economy and budget issues. It's not terribly unusual to only have 7. It is a little light, though. I mean, we've had some years where we've had 15 or 16 bridge applications. The program does require a one-to-one match, so it does take some effort on the counties to get an application into us and come up with that one-to-one match. These are expensive projects, so it's a little low, but not horribly low, I guess.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think probably the average for the amount of bridge projects requests we see in a session is around 11, something like that.
Probably.
Representative Hamilton, you have a follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that dropping from 11 to 7 doesn't sound like a big number, but that's a 40% drop in bridges. My question for Mr. Conetta again would be, are you getting feedback from these counties on the matching part being the struggle at this point? Or have you gotten any feedback that might explain why there's less interest this year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, I haven't received any feedback that the match is a problem. I'm kind of guessing that it's a problem just because, you know, all of these bridges are going to require $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 in match, sometimes more. So that's a big hit out of somebody's budget. But I haven't received feedback that match is a problem.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Kathy, did you say something? We have you a little bit low on the volume scale here.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
We can indeed.
Okay. I was just going to suggest that there may be others that are on Zoom that might have an idea. If you care to ask the folks that are on Zoom that question, Representative Hamilton.
Well, I think that would probably be fair. If there is anybody else on Zoom, especially, say, some county folks, commissioners or otherwise, that would like to try to tackle that question from Representative Hamilton, and I think the question from Representative Hamilton, he can let me know if I'm handling it fairly, wondering why, given the amount of bridges in Montana that are more than likely in a situation where they could use serious repair, if not replacement, why we are only seeing 7 project requests. So I'll give you a second here to turn that over and see if you want to raise your hands. I am not seeing any hands being raised. Heather, how about yourself?
I see no hands raised either.
Well, that is fair. I think where we were going is pretty much the gist of it. I mean, not just the matching funds, but having to get themselves in a position where they can take that on. And obviously, bridges and the rest of it being one part of the budgeting equation for localities, but not necessarily the biggest priority in any given year. I think that's about right. With that, folks, we are done with bridge projects. We have a question here in committee, and then afterwards we are going to have to take a break so that our staff has the ability to walk around a little bit before we finish. But first, we're going to go with Vice Chair Cuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I might just add, you know, a little bit to Representative Hamilton's question, is that there's an effort that goes into making any of these applications. And over the years, frequently, many of them are not funded, that there has to be some who get it and some who don't. I know one irrigation district that had what they felt was a very important project that has finally said, well, what's the point? That it's never, we keep coming back in and somebody else gets added up ahead of us. So could be some of that. You know, there's an apportionment, I think, on in the bill of how we do that. Question that I have is that, and I don't know who we have left on from the budget director's office. Is budget director Almy still on?
I am seeing a shaking head from Heather. I do not see the budget director either.
Is there someone else from the budget office on the line?
Mr. Chairman?
Ryan?
I believe that Ryan Evans is here from the budget office.
Okay. Well, I'll direct it to him, and perhaps, Kathy, you might be the one to follow up with him. But in regard to the issues that were raised earlier about the long lag time between applying for a grant, getting the grant awarded, and then getting the money to proceed with the project, and the variety of things that may happen along the way that may have some impact on the prices there. So if maybe somebody from, I assume it would be budget office, that would be, maybe it's from Commerce, that can help us with some, not asking for it right now, but before we finish up, if they can perhaps let us know. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cuff. Ryan, are you with us? I am not seeing. Oh, there we go. Just a
minute. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, sorry. I was having a problem getting unmuted here. Yes, I did hear the question. I think, you know, we can certainly follow up with Commerce and have a discussion. And just so I'm clear on the question, we're talking about a long lag time. So a project comes in, gets approved, they're in approval status, they're ready to go, and, you know, is there a length of time before the state can provide them money to actually go forward? Is that kind of the sense of the question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly the question, I believe. And I think I heard some of them say in some cases it's 2 years. So anyway, thanks for your help.
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Richard.
So I'd like to take a swing at that. TSAP is a reimbursement program. So if somebody gets an award, they still have to go through design, they still have to go through permitting, they still have to go through the bidding process, they still go through construction. That takes time. And a lot of that time is the applicant's time as they get their budgets in order and they get the design and permitting and all that stuff underway. It just takes some time. It's I'll leave it at that. The process takes some time. We're a reimbursement program. The estimates, I guess I could add, is that when we get estimates in a preliminary engineering report, those estimates should say we project construction will occur in 2022 or 2023, and there should be a construction inflation factor included in the cost estimate, which in turn is included in the grant request. So that estimate should include the year of anticipated construction. Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Further questions, comments from members of the committee on anything that we have gone through so far? Not seeing anything online nor here in person. Folks, I know that we are running slightly behind schedule, but I'm going to go ahead and have the committee take a quick 10-minute break, and so that our staff has the ability to get up and walk around a little bit. I also need to grab some stuff really fast. So I have us clocked in at 10:19. Let's go ahead and plan to have long range back in order by 10:29. And with that, long range will stand at recess for 10 minutes. There we go. For folks online, do I still have you with me, Kathy? Looks like she might be taking a second to get back here. Rachel, I see that you are with us. Is Richard as well?
Yes, I believe he is. He just has his camera off.
Perfect. Then with that, I would go ahead and call the Long Range Planning Committee back to order. And I don't know if, Rachel, you would like to take us into our next project or if Richard would prefer it, but either way works perfectly fine on my end.
Okay, I'll take this one. So next up, we have the water and wastewater projects that have TSEP funding but do not have RRGL funding. So our first project is the Loma County Water and Sewer District. This project ranked number 3 for TSEP in House Bill 11. Information on it can be found on page 10 of the TSEP handout in volume 4. The project will construct approximately 12 miles of new water main to serve 30 new users who do not currently have a safe and reliable source of water and increase flow for 15 existing users. The TSEP grant request is for $455,800, and the total project cost is $911,600. And Mr. Chairman, I believe Steve Bonmiller is here remotely to testify on behalf of Loma.
Thank you very much, and I do see a hand being raised. Stephen, are you there with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I am Stephen Bonmiller. That's spelled B-A-H-N-M-I-L-L-E-R. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 11 and the important projects it helps fund for Loma Water District. We are located in Scioto County. I am the chairman of Loma Water District. I believe Joel from Great West Engineering is registered as an informational witness and is available for questions also. Please allow me to provide some background on our existing system. We serve 120 customers, which includes the town of Loma and a large rural area encompassing approximately 350 square miles. The district committed to connect to Rocky Boys North Central Montana Regional Water Project over 15 years ago as the best long-term supply alternative for our customers. The North Central project will significantly raise our monthly water rates. However, we understand the scarcity of water in our area and are fully committed to connecting to the North Central system as our long-term water supply. North Central is currently working on the design of the pipeline which will connect our district to the rural water project and expects to construct this pipeline in the next several years. The district has had connection requests from many residents in the rural system over the years to connect to our water system. The district has been unable to provide these connections because of the lack of hydraulic capacity in our current system to deliver more water. Some of these requests for service are 20 years old. Residents in our district that are not connected to our system are forced to haul their water, which is a significant inconvenience, as well as a public health and safety issue. Our existing treatment plant is 40 years old. Now, please allow me to speak to the proposed project. The construction of the North Central Supply Pipeline will provide the district an opportunity to make a second connection to North Central system. Our project proposes installing 12 miles of new piping in our distribution system and a booster pump package located in North Central's pump station building to significantly upgrade the hydraulic capacity of our rural system. The project will allow us to deliver water to 38 new rural users, which will help spread the cost of the North Central rates and charges amongst more customers. We have broad support for this project from district residents who have provided letters of support. The proposed TSEP grant for our project makes the project affordable for our customers and will allow us to proceed with this project. I appreciate your consideration of my testimony in support of House Bill 11, and I'm willing to answer any questions you may have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you very much for your time here today. I would go ahead and check online for questions of the committee. Not seeing any hands raised. I would thank you very much for coming to spend a little bit of time with us here this morning and talk about your project. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you. And with that, I believe that we are good to move forward.
So next up is the City of Hardin. The project rank number 5 for TCEP and House Bill 11. Information can be found on page 12 of the TCEP handout. The project is for improvements at the wastewater treatment plant. The TCEP grant request is $500,000 and the total project cost is about $3.5 million. And I think we have the mayor who wants to testify and maybe somebody from Staley Engineering as well.
Well, Richard, we had you kind of tailing off there towards the end, but I did hear that Joe might be here to testify, and I see a hand raised. Joe, are you with us? Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you fine. Good morning.
Great. Good morning to you. Thank you, Chairman and committee members, for taking time to listen to my testimony today. My name is Joe Purcell, P-U-R-C-E-L-L. I'm the mayor of the City of Hardin. A little history on our project and what we have going on. Our current wastewater treatment plant was built in 1978. Most of our systems at this time are starting to fail. They're not quite meeting the Montana or the EPA standards. We have a high risk of sending untreated effluent to the Bighorn River, in essence threatening our public health and safety of our downstream residents and recreationalists. Our solution now is we put together a three-phase project, right around $11.2 million, to one, repair sewer lines in the city, second, to upgrade and repair and replace our Headworks building, and then the third phase would be to upgrade the actual plant itself. We are shovel ready. We have just actually approved bids on the phase one project as of last night. We're looking, they're asking for $500,000 to help finish our funding package, which would finish our $11.2 million project. Receiving the grant would really help ease the burden of our residents who are paying high rates. We continually increase and adjust to help accommodate for the phases of the project, and this would help keep us from continuing to raise those. So I thank you for the time to present this testimony, and if you have any questions, I'm willing and able.
Well, thank you, sir. With that, I would ask for any questions or comments from members of the committee. Not seeing any here in person nor hands raised on Zoom. I'd like to thank you for coming to speak with us this morning about your project. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And with that, I believe that we are ready to move forward.
Mr. Chairman, next up is Red Lodge. This project ranked number 20 for TCEP and House Bill 11. It is a contingent project in House Bill 11, and as such, it is also included in House Bill 14. Information can be found on pages 27 and 152 of the TCEP handout. The project is for stormwater system improvements in Red Lodge. TCEP grant request is $500,000. The total project cost is about $2.7 million. And I believe we have the Public Works Director who wants to testify.
Excellent. And good morning, sir.
Mr. Chairman Hopkins, committee, thank you for this opportunity. For the record, my name is Jim Bushnell, B-U-S-H-N-E-L-L. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Red Lodge, and I'm here to testify in support of the proposed Phase 1 stormwater project. Red Lodge baked is in the foothills there of the north face of the mountains, and we have we put in a brand-new stormwater, or a Excuse me.
Oh, you're fine.
I have to start. Our stormwater collection system, when we did our PER, we have two major problems. When we put in a new sanitary system, pond system, we shortly realized when we have a storm event, we get such an influx from the storm water that is connected to our sanitary, plus our undersized mains, and what we do have is stormwater, which I produced some pictures. We have manholes blowing off in the stormwater. But under the health and safety concerns, when we hit that stormwater, we have about a 15-20 minute window for my guys to boot up in their waders, get in the headwater, pull the deal, get the rakes, and standing in ankle-deep raw sewage, shoveling and cleaning out the solids so it doesn't flood our system. And this can take anywhere from, depending on the size of the storm, an hour, 2 hours. And there's a picture. I never once thought when we were doing this take picture, but there's a picture of as a cleanup afterwards. The cross connections that run in our deal, I mean, back in the day, that's what they did. They ran the stormwater into the sanitary, and with our new system, we're treating, you know, 40% more water than necessary at a cost. Our PER, we found 16 problem areas, and much too costly for a one project, so we broke it into five phases. Phase one is at a cost of $2.7 million estimated. The city has created a stormwater utility district to begin addressing the needs, but the grant funding and things like this are so important for small communities like us. We have $1,700 to $2,200, depending on the season in Red Lodge, because we only have two. There's winter, and winter's coming. But with much taking into consideration our needs for the grant funding, it's very important for our small community.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, sir. We appreciate you coming in today, and we appreciate you staying here with us, even as we got a little bit behind schedule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, first, is there anybody else that would like to testify on the project? Seeing none, I would ask members of the committee for questions/comments. Seeing none online, is Representative Hamilton going? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Bushnell. I see in the application in our book that you folks were awarded a TSEP grant in 2019 under the House Bill 652, but unable to meet the startup conditions in time. Whatever caused that delay, are those out of the way now? Or?
Yeah, at that point, we didn't have a way of the matching funding, and so we have put in place now, we have created a stormwater district within the whole city to help and address that funding problem which we had before.
Representative Hamilton?
A follow-up then, Mr.
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bushnell, so that stormwater system account or whatever it is that you called it that you set up, is that part of what we see in our book as the SRF funding source or shows it as $2.2 million there?
That's we formed a district. All the residents of town will pay a monthly charge of right relatively about $5 a month to build the funding to match that, and then we will need SRF funding along to help, and that will do. And then the resort tax, the 1% toward infrastructure, we've dedicated that to the stormwater system also.
Okay. Follow-up.
So,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bushnell, then what we're seeing, and you know, this is probably old news to you because you filed this a long time ago, but what we're seeing on here is just the TSEP money and the SRF money, and not seeing on the application what you're describing is the community money, but it sounds like there's quite a bit that will.
Yeah, we've just put this into effect in the last year.
Okay.
After we got that first grant, and then we're unable to come up with the funding, this is how we produced to do that was by putting in a stormwater district and the 1% of the resort tax that just went into effect in July. And so we've built a fund to make the matching funds plus also be able to pay these FRF loans and what we need to do. Like I say, it's a five-phase project. It will take several years to actually get all of it, but we have to start somewhere. And so we've with this stormwater utility, we can adjust those as necessary to move forward with as the projects as the costs fluctuates.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton, and thank you very much for coming in to talk with us here this morning and in person. We certainly appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman of the Committee.
And with that, I believe that we are ready to move on.
Mr. Chairman, just a matter of clarification. SRF stands for the State Revolving Fund. It's a land program administered by DEQ. So we'll see them as a funding partner on many of the projects as we move forward in the next couple of days.
Yep.
The next project is Hill County. The project ranked number 25 for PISA. It is included in House Bill 14. Information can be found on page 149 of the TSEP handout. The project is for improvements to a wastewater pumping station in a residential area north of Haver. The grant request is $260,500. The total project cost is $521,000. And I believe we have Jake and maybe Matt and maybe Susan to testify.
All right, and any combination of that will work fine for us. I think I see Jake starting to get set up here. Jake, can you hear us?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jake Strissel, S-T-R-I-S-S-E-L. I am a county commissioner in Hill County, and we are working in conjunction with Matt Mudd from Great West and Sue Brurud of Bear Paw Development on RSID 21 wastewater system upgrades. I thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important project for Hill County to the residents of the North Haver community. Hill County RSID was constructed in 1974. It includes 48 residential sewer services in a low-income North Haver community where the median household income is only $28,000. The community already pays over $56.70, which is 269% of the sewer target rate for sewer service. Over 75% of these costs are due to the City of Haver treatment rental fees. The age, condition, and increasing maintenance problems with the lift station are of deep concern for the county. The TSEP grant will assist Hill County upgrading an existing outdated lift station with a complete new package lift station with submersible pumps, controls, automatic emergency notification system, new backup generator, and security fending. There are several issues associated with this current lift station that will be remedied with the improvements project. That includes the fact that it is 45 years old. The metal piping and fittings inside the existing wet well are visibly corroded. The concrete well and the piping corrodes from high sulfate soils from the exterior and hydrogen sulfide corrosion from within the wet well. There have been evidence of corrosion on buried metal fittings and has been seen from excavations. The internal check valves are no longer operational and allow sewer to flow back into the wet well between each cycle. This will cause the motors and impellers to wear prematurely by reverse motion. The electronics and controls are very outdated. The original box or control box and electrical panel are still being used and do not meet electrical codes. The existing submersible pumps are continually needing to be repaired and rebuilt. And at over 20 feet in depth, the concrete wet well is susceptible to groundwater infiltration and exfiltration, given the proximity to the Milk River that flows through there. There is currently no emergency backup power provided. Information that was provided by Northwestern Energy shows that in the last 5 years, there have been 20 power outages for the circuit that supplies power to the lift station. Two power outages totaled over 2,500 minutes during a catastrophic event. This lift station does not have an emergency call-out system to notify the owners and operators in the event of an emergency. The alarm relies entirely on the nearby homeowner to call the county when the lift station is off. If a pump or power failure occurs while this resident is not home for an extended period, or this resident moves out, then the lift station and sewer lines will fill and overflow upstream area homes. We really appreciate the TSEP program grant consideration and ask for your support to fund this project. This grant is very critical to fund this project and to limit financial burdens on its users.
Well, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. I think I see that Susan also has a hand up. Susan, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Chairman Hopkins and members of the committee. I just wanted to add my testimony to that of Commissioner Strissel as to the importance of this project in our community. As he had talked earlier, that this system was installed in 1976 and the existing station is over 44 years old. A typical lifespan for a design of this type of lift station facilities is about 20 years. So this allows raw sewage to be able to, as he said, seep back into the homes of residents that are not at home at that time because there is not a monitoring system in place, as well as other shortcomings. And because of the very low income in this area, this is not something that this community will be able to move forward with without funding assistance. So we are very grateful for the TSEP program, for your consideration of our project. And I just wanted to add that, you know, your support is just so valuable to these small rural communities that are just unable to carry out these projects without your assistance. So thank you again for your consideration.
And thank you both for coming here to speak with us today. We'll go to questions or comments from members of the committee. Seeing none here in person nor any hands raised online, I just once again like to thank you both for your time and coming to talk to us here about your project. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Really fast, if you both haven't left yet, doesn't look like you have, we have Representative Hamilton with a question. Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair, this may be more of a general question, not particularly for the folks from Hill County, but I do notice that on their grant, as well as many others, there's a funding source, CDBG, and if somebody could provide the what that acronym stands for, I'd appreciate it.
Richard, yes. Kathy, whichever. Susan. No, Susan, please go right ahead.
Yes, this is Susan Bird. So the Community Development Block Grant has already been awarded as a part of the package for this project in the amount of $260,500. And so that funding, that grant award, will partner with this TSEP grant to allow this project to move forward within the community.
Thank you. That's helpful on that question. And Mr. Chair, question maybe for you. And I was a little bit late returning after our break, but I'm not sure I understand the order we're going in here.
On your stack of information, and you might just be getting handed it right now, right. You could see that our projects for the day were split into two groups. Earlier on in the morning, we tackled our seven bridge projects, and now we are going through the first set of House Bill 11 projects that we will be seeing that are just have no connection to the Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program. As we go through a lot of other projects that you'll see here, there will be connections between the different grant loan programs. So today we're knocking out the ones that don't have a connection with House Bill 6. Does that make sense? And then so the next one that we should be hearing from is Town of Phillipsburg, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Mr. Chair, follow up. So, for example, with the Hill County, the TSEP rank on that one is 25, but there's 17 TSEP projects.
Yeah, so if you were to take a look at TSEP on the whole, I believe it was 48 grant requests, seven of those being bridges. I believe that House Bill 11, Treasure State Endowment, provides funding for 1 through 17 on that project list. For the other projects that you will be seeing, including rank number 25, I believe the funding for those projects will be located within House Bill 14 itself.
Thank you.
And then, Kathy, I heard you partially there through that little talk. Did that sound about right to you? Did you have something to add?
That's totally correct, Mr. Chairman. But I also wanted to mention that while I don't have it published in your virtual binder at this point, I do have a list of acronyms and abbreviations for programs that are used in all the long-range programs. Part of it I stole actually from the Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program, book, and part of it is other things that they don't work with. So I'm going to have that out there for you, probably posted today. It will be on the your main page on your virtual binder for the Long Range Planning Subcommittee under materials or other. So just watch for that, and that might help you as you're working through these projects, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. Thank you, Kathy. I'm sure that that would be helpful. Certainly our abbreviations tend to get somewhat confusing every so often. So with that, are there any further questions, comments from members of the committee? I am seeing none online nor in person. So, Susan, thank you all very much for coming to speak with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Appreciate your time, Chairman Hopkins and the committee.
Thank you. And what did I just see? Oh, there we go. Okay, perfect. With that, I believe that we are ready to move forward.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just one more thought on CDBG, Community Development Block Grant Program. That program is administered by the Montana Department of Commerce, who use federal funds from HUD. So that is a program that is just down the hallway from DESA. So the next project is Phillipsburg. Like the last project, it is also in House Bill 14. It ranked number 36 for TCEP. Information can be found on page 151 of the TCEP handout. The project is for improvements to the wastewater treatment facility. The grant request is $750,000. The total project cost is a little over $2.6 million. And I don't know if we have anybody to testify. We may or may not have the mayor online. I don't know.
All right, and let's go ahead and give that a check. If you are online on our Zoom call and you are looking to testify on this project, please take a moment and raise your hand.
I don't see any hands raised.
Okay. With that, we would go ahead and ask for questions for comments from members of the committee. Seeing none here in person nor online, I think we are good to move forward. And if the individual does come online who is looking to testify on this project, we can always go back to make sure that we cover them as well.
So next up, we have the Sun Prairie County Water District. This project ranks number 37 for TCEP and is included in House Bill 14. Information on the project can be found on page 148 of the TCEP handout, volume 4. The project will construct a new water source, new pumps for two existing booster stations, and new fire hydrants and water. The TCEP grant request is for $275,000. And the total project cost is $595,795. Mr. Chairman, we got information that Alana Olson would like to testify on this project, but I did not see her in the attendee list. So I'm not sure if she might be there under a different name.
I do not see an Alana Olson. However, I do see a Dan Richardson who just had their hand raised. Is that looking like it's for this project here, or is that for a next project that we have coming up?
I believe he was the consultant on this one, so I bet he's trying.
Perfect. Dan, can you hear us?
Yes, we can.
Excellent. Good morning. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Ilona Olson. Thank you for granting us this time. I'm the vice president of the Sun Prairie County Water District, and I'm joined here by five other board members, our water operator, and of course, Dan, our engineer. In regards to the Sun Prairie County Water System Improvement Project number 37, our grant application is currently rated number 37 out of 40. After a review of the engineering review report dated November of 2020 and the subsequent assignment of statutory priority numbers, the board members of our water district respectfully request that these numbers be reviewed and possibly amended based on the following. First off, our two active wells were designed to provide water for up to 100 homes. We now have 103. Some expansion has already been completed, and there is more on the horizon. Land is being subdivided, and new construction is underway as the home prices in Great Falls skyrocket. The outlying communities are becoming more affordable and therefore more appealing. It would be a serious problem right now to take on any additional water customers. Second, our water system is decaying and antiquated and currently over the maximum capacity. The recovery time is very poor, and we have run completely dry, with recovery taking many hours at a very slow rate. We've had to reduce the capability of the pumps to prevent cavitation and the drying in of air instead of water. Third, there is completely inadequate fire suppression available to our residents. The local fire departments cannot refill their tanker trucks from the one hydrant, as there's insufficient pressure and the effort will cause our pumps to fail. With a new well and an upgraded system, we can install more hydrants to assist our local fire departments with fire suppression and safety. Fourth, we have received very positive feedback and support from our residents and the Cascade County Commissioners and the local fire chiefs, who have all acknowledged the water system problems and the lack of local funding available for improvements. Letters of support will be read to you shortly. The system was built in 1974, getting close to 50 years now, and in a rather haphazard fashion, with added lines here and there as plots were subdivided and more homes were built. It's really in dire need of an upgrade to include meters to promote responsible water usage, replacement of crumbling and corroded lines, a new well with better water quality and yield, installation of more fire hydrants, and new variable frequency drive pumps to provide adequate pressure for household use and for fire suppression. We have done the best we can with the limited resources available and repaired and replaced as much as we could afford to do. We've reached a point now of throwing good money after bad, and things cannot be fixed any further. We really have done our utmost to be good stewards of the land and the water and our community, but we need your help now to bring this water system back up to decent, reliable, and safe utility. I have a letter here I'd like to read from the Cascade County Commissioners.
Please.
Chairman Hopkins and members of the Joint Appropriations Subcommittee on Long Range Planning. Sun Prairie County Water District is a small rural water district with 103 properties using community wells and designed and implemented in the early 70s. This water system provides house water, but is antiquated, requiring constant maintenance and repair and in dire need of replacement. The water quality is marginally adequate by DEQ standards with chemical treatment, but we receive complaints by users of heavy dark orange and rust-colored debris in the water, staining and ruining of household appliances, inability to use it as a drinking water source. The rural fire departments are unable to use the district's water system for any fire mitigation, requiring them to haul water from other locations, reducing their effectiveness in fighting home and land fires. Because of the large amount of silt in the Sun River, although close, the river is unusable as the silt wears and clogs the siphoning equipment. This rural water district has covenants that allow for the development of lots into lots as small as 2.5 acres, which would significantly increase demands on a water system that's currently having trouble providing for the residents already on our system. The wells are inadequate, the pumping system is inadequate, and the delivery systems to the homes are inadequate, let alone the abilities to expand to new users. Sun Prairie County Water District has applied for a TSEP grant for the past 2 years and has not ranked high enough to receive the matching grant to resolve their water quality and supply problems. We, the County Commissioners of Cascade County, strongly endorse their efforts to correct their water deficiencies through the grant and matching grant process because of limited fiscal local alternatives. Other alternatives to remedy their problems mentioned in their grant request are more costly and just not realistic. We ask that the Sun Prairie Water System be given any possible consideration for state assistance with their upgrade project. And it is signed respectfully, the Cascade County Board of Commissioners, Joe Briggs, Commissioner, and Jim Larson, Commissioner. We also have a letter from one of the rural fire chiefs where he goes into detail explaining how long it would take for unload and dump time to fill their tanker if they're fighting a fire here. And they are also very much in support of this project.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate it, and I would go ahead and go to questions or comments from members of the committee really fast. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Olson, here's my question, a twofold question. Number one, looks like you had been awarded a grant previously but didn't make the startup conditions, and wondering if those problems have been eliminated so that if you've got a grant this time, you would be able to meet the startup conditions.
Yeah, certainly. That was it was an SRF match that we had the last cycle, and we were given the notice of award of it the day the funding was gone for that house bill, the last thing. So it has been remedied for this round.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Olson. My second question then is, it sounds like in some ways this is a small subdivision, and that there are still lots for sale there or development, and I'm unclear as to why a developer wouldn't be involved in matching some of this money for a water system improvement.
I would say no, sir. There are no lots open for development at this particular time, but some folks are subdividing, and there is not a developer that is handling a development project in Sun Prairie Estates, no.
Follow up. Mr. Chair, Ms. Olson, then I guess what I'm understanding then is you're saying it's not a development project, it's merely current homeowners are subdividing their property and selling off 2.5 acres.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Seeing no further questions here in person nor online, I would just say to everybody gathered there on Dan Richardson's little Zoom title, I would say thank you very much for coming in to speak with us today. We certainly appreciate your time and you coming to talk to us about your project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And we sure appreciate your time also today. Thank you.
Absolutely. And really fast before we move on to the next project, Heather, I see Gene Curtis in our Zoom call with our hand up, so I do just want to check and make sure really fast that Gene is not looking to testify on Sun Prairie. Gene, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I was going to testify on Sealy, and I was on another call, so I kept watching you guys. I hope I didn't miss my opportunity.
That's what I expected. So we have one more project to go over on our normal sheet for the day. Technically, Sealy is not up today. However, once we get through this next project, I'm going to call for any remaining individuals who are on our Zoom call who would like to testify generally on House Bill 11. So you are more than welcome to stick around with us for a minute, and then we should be able to get to you.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. And with that, I think that we are ready to move on to the City of Livingston.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. City of Livingston, the project ranked number 40 for the Treasure State Endowment Program. It is included in House Bill 14. Information can be found on page 150 of the TSIP handout. The project is for construction of sewer lines in the vicinity of the Livingston Civic Center and adjacent parks. So what you're seeing there is a picture of the Livingston Civic Center. Sorry. The grant request is $312,727, and the total project cost is $625,454. I am not aware of anybody who wants to testify on this, but maybe there is.
Let's go ahead and give it a second here. If there's anybody still on our Zoom call that is looking to testify specifically on City of Livingston Wastewater Project, please take a moment and raise your hand on Zoom right now. Heather, I am not seeing anybody. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. With that, I would ask for questions, comments from members of the committee. Seeing none here in person nor online. I do believe, Richard, could you confirm for me really fast that that is the last project that we have officially to go over for today at least?
Happy that. That's true.
Excellent. All right. Well, then at this time, I notice we still have a few individuals who are on Zoom. We are done with our official project list for the day, but if you are here to provide testimony on either House Bill 11 or House Bill 14, go ahead and take a second here and raise your hand for us so that we can see and get you in. And we, of course, do have Jean Curtis here up first with her hand raised. Jean, are you still with us? Looks like you might need to unmute yourself if you are. Jean, can you hear us? Well, we'll give Jean here a second. Oh, there we go.
I have found the mute button. Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
That's perfectly fine. Our good old electronic ear here. Please, go right ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Jean Curtis. C-U-R-T-I-S-S, and I serve as the district manager for the Sealy Lake Sewer District. The Sealy Lake Sewer District is in the process, so we're in House Bill 14 as project number 18. The Sealy Lake Sewer District is in the process of constructing a much-needed community wastewater treatment system in Sealy Lake. Several studies have linked the elevated nitrates in groundwater to the density of septic systems within the district. And since 1992, the district has worked with engineers to understand the issue, design a system to address the issue, and seek grants and low interest loans to make the project as affordable as possible, as there's only 508 properties within the district. The treatment plant will serve the full district, but the collection system is being proposed in four phases. The treatment plant and phase one of the collection system are designed and approved by DEQ, and they are the qualified electors in the district will vote on February 23rd on the bonds to repay the low interest loans. So the district has just under $7 million in grants and other funds for the treatment plant and $3.6 million in grants for the other funds in phase and other funds for phase one. The application before you is for phase two. And there is a map, I think they sent a map of showing the different phases. So that it's a sequential batch reactor is the type of program we've chosen. So this project will solve the public health and safety issues of elevated nitrates in the groundwater in the district. The Missoula City County Board of Health had established a special management area within the district in 2015 because of those nitrate levels. And one of our local, like one of the main businesses there, Rivero's, which is a convenience store, gas station, hardware store, had to replace their system with a level two at the cost of about $150,000. So you can see that's not good for the community. There are people who have small lots within the community that also cannot even put a cabin on. So many of the 153 properties that are in phase two are lake lots, and protecting that groundwater and then the surface water from pollutants is very important to the people who live in this community and the people who come there to recreate. Also, the community water system draws their water from the north end of the lake. The south end of the lake is where the town sits. So, as you know, you put something in the bathtub and it swirls around. So we want to protect the area. The district really appreciates the opportunity to apply for this grant through TSEP. This TSEP program is, of course, very important to local government. We are one who did reapply, and
And I heard one of your committee members ask if why we didn't meet the all the conditions last time in time, and it was had to do with funding. So the vote by the people will have this project fully funded. We didn't have quite all of our money lined up. And I'm here for any questions.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jean. We certainly appreciate it. And for members both here in person and online, we will officially be tackling the Sealy project, which, as Jean had mentioned, is ranked 18 in your sheet, or the funding for it is contained within House Bill 14 here in the coming days. But considering the type of session that we're having with our technological integration, I feel like we always try to accommodate wherever we can. So with that, Gene, thank you very much for coming in to speak with us today. We certainly appreciate your time.
Mr. Chairman, would you like me to join tomorrow in case there are questions?
You certainly can, if you have it open. Well, first, I guess we should probably check. Kathy or Richard or Rachel, do you happen to know off the top of your head, is Sealy coming up tomorrow? I know that we're bringing up House Bill 6, so I guess I would toss it over to, it looks like, Rachel.
Yeah, Sealy is up, supposed to be at 10:46 tomorrow.
Perfect. Gene, did you catch that, Gene?
Yes, I did. I will join in case there are questions.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate it. With that, I would ask one more time for anybody who is left online in our Zoom call, if there is any testimony, proponent or opponent, that you were looking to give to the committee today in regards to either House Bill 11 or House Bill 14, now would be the time to raise your hand. Not seeing any hands being raised. Heather can correct me if I am wrong.
You are correct.
All right, with that, do we have any questions, comments from members of the committee in general for committee business? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I just need a sort of a sense of organization here. I understand.
You're fine.
We went through the bridges today. That made perfect sense. These other projects that we went through in the later morning are in their rank order, but they're not projects 1 through 17. Were these ones that we heard in the later morning heard because they're only in House Bill 14? And other projects we'll hear will be both in 11 and 14?
Representative Hamilton, they were heard because they are only in House Bill 11 or House Bill 14. So tomorrow, for instance, we will be opening up House Bill 6, the Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program. A lot of individuals who are looking to get projects done will be applying to, say, both the Treasure State Endowment Program as well as the Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program. So we try to couple all those together so that we're hearing similar projects at similar times. Today, the slate of projects that you heard, other than the bridge request, are projects that are solely contained within the bills that we are discussing today. Rachel, Kathy, Richards, does this sound about right to you?
Yes, that's exactly right.
So,
excellent.
Follow-up question, Mr. Chair, then. So, once again, just in terms of my organizational sense, the first two that were in later morning, Loma and City of Hardin, are low in the ranks, so obviously must be in HB 11, and the other ones from 20 on up are in HB 14.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yep, no problem at all. Do we have any other questions, comments from members of the committee? All right, with that, I believe...
Chairman.
Oh, Kathy, there you go, perfect.
So I think that the representative was out of the room first thing this morning, perhaps, but the way that I like to think of it, Representative Hamilton, is that we really are doing hearings by program. And so what you heard today were projects that were only in the TSEP program. Tomorrow, you'll hear projects that have applied for two programs, TSEP and RRG. So maybe that kind of helps you to kind of keep it clear in your mind.
Thank you, Kathy. That does help.
Excellent. Any further comments from anybody that we have on Zoom? I have a couple of housekeeping items, and then I think that we will be done for the day here. I am not seeing any hands go up on Zoom. So I would just say that, one, not dealing with today's business, but with yesterday's business, we had talked about House Bill 12 and getting a complete ranking report of all the different requests that had been brought in and how they were gone over by administering agency. This would be the fun binder that I am currently holding up. If there is a member of the committee who would like to take a look at the binder for the day before I take it to the House floor with me, please let me know. Representative Hamilton, are you interested?
Make two of them for us.
They did make two of them. I've handed one to staff for right now. Oh. You and I will share this one. And then in a general sense, I was going to say, once members who have wanted to give it a look over have given it a look over and it returns to my possession, it will be on my desk on the House floor for committee members' review at any time.
Great. I would like to borrow it, if I may.
Perfect. And then... finally, I've gotten – oh, yeah, absolutely. Finally, I'd gotten a couple texts over the last couple of days in addition to today regarding individuals who are watching our hearings through the regular MPAN and encountering some audio issues, and obviously here in committee we've encountered a few microphone issues as well. And I just wanted to apologize for that, say that we are working on it, and you know we are in somewhat of a weird session where we are trying out some new systems here, and for the most part they've worked out pretty good for us, but some of the audio issues we're not exactly able to solve in committee, and so working with our IT folks, we hope to have that shaped up here for you. But in just a general sense, as the chair, wanted to apologize to those folks who might be trying to tune in and having problems hearing the committee's business. With that, I think I had a couple of other questions, but I will save that. It's probably better shaped up for tomorrow's actions. So members, we will be coming in at 8:30 tomorrow. And we will be opening up on House Bill 6 and then going through projects that are in House Bill 6 that are also connected to House Bill 11, also connected to House Bill 14, et cetera, moving on down the line for our work. So if there are no more comments from members of the committee, I'm going to go ahead and adjourn. Whoop, Kathy?
Mr. Chairman, did you get in front of you an invitation from the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks? I think it perhaps was a digital release that they're planning for Sunday. Do you see that in front of you?
I believe Vice Chair Cuff just said yes, and yes, we do.
Okay, I'm going to post that invitation out on our virtual binder. And anyway, I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that that invitation was out there.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And then for anybody who might not be able to say it at face value, if our cameras are working pretty good, holding up a little copy of it here. So if that's going to be posted online, that works great for us. And then was that it, Kathy? Did you have anything else to add for us before we close for the day? All right. With that, members, we'll be back in here at 8:30 a.m. and Long Range Planning Committee is adjourned.